We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Lauren Bailey.
And I'm Nick Kane.
And welcome to Podcast 23.
First of all, we would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present, on which this podcast recording today takes place.
Podcast 23.
Here we are. So I guess we start off this month, Lauren, and we start off talking about the Cultural Temperature blog. How fantastic has that been?
Yes, we should definitely talk about the blog because it's been very exciting. We've been going for, is it 4 months now?
4 months.
4 months. And if you haven't dipped into the blog yet, our method that we've worked out, I suppose, is we come up with a theme each month and then all of our bloggers mm-hmm. write about it from their own perspective in relation to storytelling in Australia.
One of the things I've really loved about it, Lauren, is the diversity of everyone's difference in opinions with what they take that particular theme for the month and then turn it into. So it's been really lovely to see people be really vulnerable by sharing something personable or really knowledgeable about researching a subject and getting to the heart of, you know, a particular topic.
You're absolutely right. You know, I think, what have we had? Diversity, there you go, sustainability. Yeah. But I'm like, oh, okay, I know what angle I would come at this from. And so it's great that it's just so great to see other people receive that theme in a completely different way.
It really is.
And the other thing that I really liked about it, in the same way that when we catch up on the blog each month and we sort of review our months and reflect on our journeys, it's another form of reflection, mm-hmm. but also one that, I mean, obviously we're learning each month, but for sustainability, for instance, I wrote about green filmmaking, which is something that is increasingly important to me. But to do that, I had to research a whole heap of stuff and learn a whole heap of things. So that's something that's been exciting for me.
Yeah, and to just reference another blog that was fantastic by Andrea, which was a new universal around more stories being told through a female lens.
Yeah.
I was really interested when she originally said she was going to do that topic, because I think sometimes, you know, that whole subject can be hijacked by people's agendas or emotions. But what I really loved about Andrea's blog was that it was a really lovely, well thought through piece that actually I went, wow, that's a fantastic way to look at it, and a conversation that I'd love to have with Andrea, you know, and talk about it from my perspective, being a, you know, a white middle class man.
Yeah.
Which is kind of complete opposite of what she's talking about.
Oh, that's so really, I really love exciting that. To hear. I mean, and she did get quite, we have had quite a bit of conversation about that online too. So it's obviously something that, you know, I feel like gender equality, and it is such a conversation at the moment, which is a really exciting thing. But it was brilliant to hear her perspective on it.
It was. And we want to hear more perspectives too. So we'd love to expand the blog right across Australia. So at the moment, I know that we're predominantly Melbourne and Sydney, but we want to put it out there. If you are a storyteller based in another city, whether that be one of the major cities or a regional place, if you're interested, you can submit to be a part of the team. So please email us at theactofstorytelling@gmail.com if you want to be a part of it.
And it's something that I don't know how much we've talked about what we're hoping to achieve with the blog, Nick, but we are really excited that this is an Australian storytelling resource for Australian storytellers.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear from you on thoughts for things that we could do. But if you are out there and feel like you have a voice, a storytelling voice, and you want to be heard, then we should see if we should be working together.
Totally. And we're a friendly bunch. So, you know.
Well, some of us are.
Did you say I am or you are?
I said we all are.
Okay, great. Just clarifying. Now, Lauren, last month we actually had quite an in-depth interview of our own personal outcomes of 2015 and the crystal ball into 2016 and what that might hold for us. It was a lot to do at the time, and listening back, Lauren, it was like, wow, that was pretty full on to do, wasn't it?
Well, obviously going in, I was a little bit nervous, but I actually really, yeah. I really loved it. And just a really nice thing to do at the beginning of the year. We obviously recorded that a couple of weeks before we went live for the month. So it feels like it's quite some time ago now. So it's really interesting to think about where I'm at now in relation to all of the things that I said in that podcast.
Well, great segue. Where are you at with all of those things?
Well, it's been a very interesting month and a half. I've been thinking about when we recorded last month, I was very much about this trusting myself thing that was happening.
Yeah.
I've been faced with a few challenges since we last recorded, and that's made me question if that is how I feel and if that is what I'm doing. And I think it is, but I think what also sort of coincided was that I burnt myself out pretty completely off the back of the Possible campaign for the film and recording and getting started for the year. Something I've been realizing is, oh, you know, there's stuff happening, so I'm just going to trust that that will continue. And I feel that when I say those things, by saying them, I'm putting them in action. But because I said, oh, I'm trusting myself, and then I burnt myself out, I wasn't acting on any of the things that I normally am. So in some ways, I feel like I came to a standstill, and I realized that my sort of daily work schedule became so full that it was difficult to find time to act on those creative things anyway, let alone worry about whether I was trusting myself or not.
And yes, there's a time when your body says, and your mind, your body and your mind say, no, I need a break. And you don't have a choice in that, you know. That is almost like a third party going, no, Lauren, you know what? We're going to have a rest. You've been pushing us too hard for too long.
Yeah,
so that's
it's
that
like
burnout
my, it's
moment,
like my
it?
Mind hadn't caught up with my body, though. My body knew it was burnt out, but my mind was like, go, 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 you good thing. Excitingly, for this record, I've made some changes to my schedule so that it looks like I'll have time, a bit more time on my hands going forward to work on the stuff that excites me.
Oh, that's good. It's interesting hearing you talk about this too, because when I reflect on my month, it's a concept which I'm calling balance versus balancing.
Oh, yep.
So I've been seeing a life coach. I'm pretty sure I've spoken about the life coach on this podcast before, but...
Well, it's exciting. Just before you go on, it's exciting because I feel like you've talked about it on the podcast, but as about something that you were beginning.
Yeah, well, here we go. One of the points that the life coach raised, because I talk a lot about finding balance in my life, and I'm sure listeners have heard me say I like to find balance in what I'm doing. And she brought up a really interesting point. It's around this idea of the weight of expectation. I was defining balance as a state of equilibrium. As a really basic example, saying, righty, I need to have 2 to 3 days of acting a week, and then I need 2 to 3 days of work a week, right? And it needs to balance because I need both sides of things in my life.
Yeah.
She challenged me on that. She goes, see, balance is a little bit different to that, right? Balance, if you look at one of those old... balance scales. Thank you for using the right words. It's going nowhere with that. Scales, right?
I'm like, what's he doing with his hands?
Which no one can see, but you could see. Thank you. But like scales, right? What you do is you put 2 or 3 weights on one side and it dips right to one side. You put 2 or 3 weights on the other side and it balances out. You keep putting weights on, taking them off, and it keeps balancing. So this idea of balancing rather than balance was really interesting.
Yeah.
So she said, you're always, the joy is in trying to find the balancing motion. So the whole idea of it's never going to be perfect. You're never going to find that exact equilibrium balance. It's always going to be about being in the moment and finding the joy in the action of juggling what you're doing.
Yeah, I love that idea of finding the joy. That's a fantastic way to view it.
Yeah, isn't it? Because it's kind of fun, you know? And she spoke about juggling as well, you know, the idea of, you know, balls in the air. Oh, you nearly dropped that one, but then you quickly get it and you throw it back up in the air. And, you know, so this idea of it being fun is quite a relief to think of it like that, rather than trying to go, I need life to be perfect.
Yeah.
it was just an interesting concept that the life coach has helped me with.
And what's been happening in the acting world this month?
I have finally started my Sydney Screen Actors Group classes, the once a week classes that are up here in Sydney.
Yep.
You might have remembered, Lauren, I tried to do term one.
Yeah, and it wasn't right time-wise or something, is that?
Wasn't right time-wise. I had a lot going on, but finally I've been able to get there and do it. So been to a couple of classes so far. I've enjoyed it. You know, it's funny when you say to someone, hey, we're going to give you a scene every week and you're going to put it up every week and there'll be a new scene the next week and then you put that one up. It's quite a daunting task, isn't it?
Yes.
But what I've enjoyed about it is flying by the seat of my pants with it a little bit. I've only got a week. I can only do so much with character development, with the study of the scene.
And isn't it funny? Because if we get an audition, it's often, oh, you've got 2 days.
Well, this is the thing.
We just knuckle down and do that, don't we? We don't think about it at all.
Well, that's the thing too, isn't it? That it's much like an audition process. So it's kind of good to be working that muscle, much like the audition process would be.
It's so true. It's so important to be in the habit of. I feel like I've been doing really focusing predominantly on screen auditioning for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an interesting experience with a theatre audition.
Oh, yeah.
Since we last recorded. So it's really nice to be thinking about acting for stage and just the different sort of areas of your tool that requires. But anyway, it was in my sort of period of burnout. I went in for this audition. I actually did a really terrible audition.
Oh, no. My heart dropped for you then.
I was so excited about it. Yes, haven't done any theatre for a while. This will be yeah, great, yeah. And a really interesting show. And and I just was so disappointed with myself.
Was it just the scenario? Like, what? Talk to me about what you were disappointed about.
I felt funny in the room I was in. I felt like there was no atmosphere. I have a relationship with the director, like I know him, right. So there was rapport there, but I felt like everything I said was awkward. and what was really funny was, like, it was such a terrible audition that I was like, okay, great, I just need to put that behind me and move on and not let it worry me. So I was completely shocked to discover when I checked my emails the next day that I had a call back.
Oh, wow. There you go. Didn't see that coming, did you?
So I just wanted to mention it on the podcast because for me it was a really, really clear example of you think you've done one thing in the room and you just never know. I went in for the callback. I was there for a couple of hours. I had so much fun. It was fantastic and I didn't get the part. But I was so happy with the audition and working with the director was so much fun that, you know, that's just how it is. Like, there are other stories to tell, right? But, and for me, I just learned it was a really good reminder of, I guess, being nice to ourselves.
Yeah, that you don't know exactly how things have come across. Do you know what I mean?
Well, not only do you not know exactly, but you also might be completely wrong. So why don't you just trust yourself?
Correct.
And your
awkwardness might have been just, you know, oh, she was really cool and funky, wasn't she?
She was hilarious.
Yeah, totally hilarious.
Sure, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So that's probably a good note for us to get on with the work.
Indeed.
Some very joyful work we had this month, sitting down with the wonderful creative team behind Human Animal Exchange, the very lovely Justine Campbell and Sarah Hamilton.
Well, here we are with theatre makers Justine Campbell and Sarah Hamilton, the two halves of Human Animal Exchange Theatre Company. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us. We're delighted to be here.
And Nick, you are, of course, Skyping
it's
in
absolute pleasure.
From Sydney. But we're here this evening at the wonderful Melbourne Arts, and we're actually in the pavilion, which is a bit quieter up here. So you can we're indoors, Nick, but you can imagine us in a pavilion. This neck of the woods has quite a bit of resonance for you both. We're situated between two of Melbourne's largest theatre companies. We're inside the Melbourne Theatre Company and we're also near the Malthouse, both of which have produced and supported your work.
That's right. We were fortunate enough in the last few weeks to be part of Melbourne Theatre Company's Cybec Electric Sarah and I wrote a play which we've been working on for the last 4 months or so called Untold, and it was a really wonderful experience because we weren't in it. Usually when we're writing, we're writing for ourselves, and this one was written for a cast of four, two older women and two younger women. And
I should tell you, because this is all amazing stuff, and exactly, we definitely want to talk about Untold. But we normally start at the top with your stories, just to give our listeners a little bit of context. Over to you both.
This is Justine here. My heritage is Irish, Scottish, Welsh, and Indigenous Taiwanese. I was born in Palmerston North, New Zealand, a university town of about 100,000 people. And when I was four, my family moved to Singapore. My parents were missionaries. And we lived in a Bible college surrounded by lots of people. And every year, a travelling opera company would come to the block of land opposite and set up their theatre on stilts. And they would sleep underneath in the hammocks every night. And they would stay for a period of 2 weeks, and they would do this every year. And so every night for 2 weeks, I would cross the street and watch in fascination as they put on their makeup and their costumes and watch them perform their Chinese opera. And the performance was so specific and engaging, and it was like nothing I'd ever encountered before. And that was what really sparked my interest in theatre. That was the seed for me.
It's Sarah here. I was born in Launceston, Tasmania, and grew up in Hobart and on Tassie's east coast. My parents and grandparents are all excellent storytellers and imbued me with the love of a good yarn from a very young age. I grew up bushwalking in Tassie and worked as a bushwalking guide in the Cradle Mountain Lake St Clair National Park from the age of 16 through to I was around 23. This time definitely fostered my passion for the natural world. I feel most centred on top of a mountain. I knew I wanted to act when I was 10 and realised I loved writing stories when I was at uni. 5 years after that, I wrote my first play. Having a collaborator, a partner in artistic crime, is a wonderful thing. Justine and I dare, support and inspire each other. Our company, Human Animal Exchange, explores the relationship and struggle between our human and animal instincts and our exchange with the natural world.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your stories. Really interesting and diverse, both of you. And we'll get into that. But let's start, first of all, with you, Justine, in regards to, you've spoken a little bit about the Chinese opera, which sounds super interesting. But are there any other creative influences that influenced you during childhood?
I spent a lot of time going to the ballet. My mum was a massive ballet fan. She was a ballet dancer while she was young, and that was her aim in life, to be a ballerina, until she found God and became a missionary. So in many ways I was surrounded by the arts, but I think as well there's a funny statistic about preachers and missionaries' children, and it's that 60% of them become artists. And I think there's something about, there's something strange about families that have that sort of spiritual drive, I guess. My parents, in a way, they were telling stories themselves. They were telling the story of their belief and what they believe, you know, to be the way to live. So I guess that really
Influenced
me.
Isn't there often that connection, they say, that artists were the people often pushing change and catalysts for change, and that spiritual connection, they're trying to do the same thing and have a positive influence on humanity. So
absolutely, absolutely. And I think that that inherent nature in the way my parents are, that came down to myself and, you know, my brother, who's also an artist. And for Human Animal Exchange and for us as artists, it's so important. Why are we telling this story? What's the reason behind it? Why is it important? That's something that's integral in the way that we think about the work when we're developing it, and probably what also sparks our interest in the work to begin with in the subject matter.
And so what age were you when you moved to Australia?
I was about 13 when I moved to Australia.
Was that to Melbourne?
No, it was to Brisbane. So I grew up in Brisbane, and then I moved back to Asia. So I lived in Korea, and then eventually I came to Melbourne in 2009 to study.
At the VCA. And so you both actually attended quite prestigious performing arts colleges. And we'll, don't worry, we will get to you in a second, Sarah.
I'm panicking over here. You're not talking to me, Lauren.
Oh, that's what that look was for. I'm guessing that you learnt a lot during your degree. We do want to get into talking about your collaboration, but before we get into that, was there a sort of a main takeout for you, Justine, from your university years?
Actually, I think that when I was at VCA, I think not only I studied directing at VCA, but it really helped me to begin to define the sort of theatre that I wanted to make, and it gave me the tools and the critical way of being able to do it and the understanding. And also, I actually have to say that one of the lecturers that I worked with, who was my supervisor, Jenny Kemp, her method of working with actors was something that I took on because I'd trained initially as an actor, and I found that method, it really changed my life as an actor.
Wow.
And it really helped me to become a better actor. So it was, even though I went there to become a better director, also the byproduct was to be a better actor. And I think as well it opened me up to the possibility of being able to write my own work. It gave me that confidence in the fact that, you know, I was able to work as an artist.
Had your own stories to tell.
Absolutely.
Which probably is a nice lead in to your, co-conspirator, if you will, your collaborator. Now, Sarah, you grew up in Tasmania. Where exactly in Tassie?
Well, I was born in Lonnie and then lived on the East Coast.
Lonnie, I love it.
Born in Lonnie and grew up. Then our family moved to Four Mile Creek, which is on the East Coast of Tassie, and then moved to Hobart.
Yes.
And then spent my summer holidays up on the East Coast because my dad lived up there. And yeah, so but Hobart was my main stomping ground.
And you have talked a little bit about, you know, about nature, yeah, and what it meant to you. But what about from a artistic perspective, were there any elements in Tassie, in those different locations, that really hit you as a child and influenced you into acting and producing and writing?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, actually. There were times when I was so struck by the absolute extremities of nature in Tassie. I used to work as a bushwalking,
yeah,
guide, as I said in my little story earlier. But there were days, you know, up in those, in that high country, it was like just after Christmas, and you'd be walking along when in theory it should be 25 degrees and sunny, and you were struggling to stand up because the wind was so strong and you couldn't move your fingers because of the snow and the,
yeah,
ice. And so I was exposed to really extreme conditions, and I think that really helped me grow up a lot, because I had to be able to think on my feet and help protect other people because I was working as a guide.
Yeah.
So I had to protect other people and myself in really extreme circumstances. And I would say that in a way that has definitely informed the work that I have created and has inspired me, just that extreme beauty and, you know, the power of nature has, I'd say, definitely informed the work that I make.
So you say that you knew that you wanted to act when you were 10.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like there was a specific moment of realisation there.
Yeah, well, I wanted to be an Olympic athlete to begin with.
Nice.
And
oh,
I,
yes,
actually asked my year 5 teacher to call me Kathy, because I loved Kathy Freeman so much. And then I set a goal in year 5, because we all had to set like a running task, because our teacher was obsessed with running. And I set my task to run from like the northernmost tip of of Tasmania to the southernmost tip. And we'd do it every day by running 1 kilometre at school, and we'd like add it up. And then I realised that that was probably going to take me a really long time, and I couldn't actually be bothered running the whole distance of the state.
Yeah.
But then around that time I started to realise that I quite liked showing off. Yeah, around that time my mum enrolled me in drama class.
That's
yeah.
Right.
And then I decided once I started drama classes in about year five that that was definitely what I wanted to do. And I've stuck to my guns ever since.
That was the goal. And was that the reason to move to the mainland, if you don't mind me saying that? Was because of your Bachelor of Arts at the University of Ballarat?
Yeah, look, staying in Tassie for me, I hate to say it, but at the time it didn't really feel like an option, because I knew that I wanted a future in the performing arts, and it felt like a very closed world down there at the time. It's definitely evolving now. But, yeah, I definitely wanted to head to the mainland. Before that, though, I spent a couple of years travelling overseas and exploring the world, and then ended up moving to Ballarat and studying there.
So you're both wonderful multi-hyphenate storytellers, meaning you have multiple facets to the way you share your stories. Sarah, you have writing, performing and producing, and Justine, you can add directing and teaching into that mix.
Is
that kind of covered?
Right. Yeah.
Which of these skills do you both feel that you identify with most, or do you each feel that you identify with most?
I'll start. I actually don't feel that I identify with one more than the other. I love all of them, and it's so wonderful to be able to conceive of something in your mind, I guess, and turn an idea into something that is living and breathing. I must say that in terms of satisfaction, I have probably felt the most satisfaction in terms of writing and directing, I think, because I felt such artistic ownership, I guess, of the work in a way that I haven't so much felt sometimes with acting. In saying that, I so love it when I get to act in a show and I don't have the responsibility of having to direct it as well, you know. So.
But there is something really powerful, isn't there, being able to manage your own career in regards to going, right, if I want to write something, I'll go and write it, and I can perform in it, and I can even direct it if I want to.
Yeah.
There's a real power or ownership of your career.
Oh, absolutely. And I think maybe Sarah can speak to that about when you met Queenie.
Mm.
Yeah, and how that really changed your life.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I started off as an actor, and that's definitely the root of my passion in the performing arts. That's what I first discovered I loved. And then one day I got my Actors Equity email. You know, I usually open them up and have a little look. And there was something about putting your hat in the ballot for a course called Creating the Career of Your Dreams. And I thought, sure, why not? I'll give that a crack. Sure enough, my name came up. And I got to spend a day with Queenie Van Der Zandt, who's a fantastic performer. And I'd heard of her before but never met her. And I went to this workshop and it changed my life, I would say.
Wow.
It was incredible in terms of setting goals for yourself and creating strategies to meet them to ensure that I was on a path that I really wanted. And it encouraged me to look outside the square, so not just to think, you know, of myself as a performer, but look at my other skills as well and how I could embrace them and bring them together.
And I'm just curious in terms of timeline, because I met you in 2007 when I worked with you on a show with Adam Cass. Was this experience with Queenie before or after?
Oh, it was after that. So it would have been 2010. And I decided that day that I wanted to make a show, which was called A Donkey and a Parrot, and that was my first foray into writing. And that's how I met Justine, because I was looking for a really awesome director, and I had Justine's name pop up. And so I sent her a message on Facebook, even though we weren't friends or anything, and was like, will you meet with me and have coffee? Anyway, here we are 5 years later working together.
And so your motivation to reach out to Justine, is that something that you came directly from that class with Queenie, do you think?
Yes, because I knew I wanted to create a product that I was really proud of, and it was like I was striving to do my very best, and I knew that to do that I needed to work with a really exciting director. Yeah, and Justine was my lady. Oh, I wanted to extend myself.
And was that the beginning after that particular show where you started the company?
It was actually after we first made They Saw a Thylacine. So we worked together on Donkey, yes, and then we had a ball. We toured it to Edinburgh. We both went over and it was
great.
Really great experience, a real learning curve, but awesome, awesome, awesome. And then because we'd had so much fun, we agreed we wanted to make another show together. And as we made Thylacine, we talked about forming a company, and then we did.
Mm. And I think we had, after doing Donkey and a Parrot, because I had been putting it out there, you know, I guess to the universe that I wanted to work with a collaborator. And after we did a Donkey and a Parrot, remember we went and had dinner or something, and then we had a conversation about, oh, maybe we should form a company, ha, ha, ha.
And I was like, yes.
Sarah was really keen, and I was really keen, and I think we just thought, okay, well, we'll see what happens and we won't put too much pressure on ourselves, because if we want to do this, you know, it's going to be for real. It's going to be a commitment. So then, yeah, it was after we did the next show that we thought, yep, this is a good thing. We're onto a good thing here.
And you mentioned in your story that the intent of human-animal exchange is to explore the relationship and struggle between our human and animal instincts and our exchange with the natural world. Can you guys talk about why you're both drawn to telling stories that examine these themes?
I guess my family, I come from a family of scientists. My father was a biologist and an ornithologist, as well as being a missionary. So always from the time I'd grown up, there was my father and I used to go out and we would collect butterflies together, and there was always, that was one of the ways that we connected, was through nature. And before I wanted to be an artist, I wanted to be a vet. So I've always had a love of animals. And also a book that I had read, which is called The Chimp Paradox, which I think is very common knowledge, but this sort of puts it into a fairly direct framework. I mean, the fact that we are human animals, we are animals as well, we are part of this world along with a multitude of other creatures and insects. And often we seem to forget that because we're at the top. Now we assume ourselves to be at the top. And interestingly, I often wonder what, you know, how we as humans living now, we look back on people in the past and we judge them and we think, how could they have had slaves and, you know, that sort of thing. And I wonder whether humans in the future will look back on us, and I wonder what they will judge us for, whether they will judge us for our speciesism, you know, the fact that we just feel that sense of entitlement to do what we please with the earth and with the creatures upon the earth, many, many of us. So that is something that is really important to us in terms of the work that we make.
So, yeah, that's a really great lead-in to your show, They Saw a Thylacine, which was heavily awarded in the end. It was a wonderful show, and it was all based around the extinction of the Tasmanian tiger. Now, that show won numerous awards. As I said, it won Best Performance and also the Tour Ready Award at Fringe Festival. It went on to tour NZ and Adelaide Fringe Festivals, and you also racked up a few more awards, I believe, in regards to Best Writing, Production, and female performers at the 2013 Green Room.
We had some
Awards.
Nominations. We didn't win them. We just got nominated.
Nominations. Beautiful. Okay. We could have just gone with winning. That's fine. Yeah. So, but did you have any idea in regards to that show how successful it was going to be, how it was going to be received?
Absolutely not. No, we didn't at all. It was interesting. Mm. We made that show in a fairly condensed period of time, and we made some very pointed decisions on the style that we were going to make it in, and we wanted to keep it very simple and intimate. And I think that those choices that we made, which were largely to do with the amount of time we had to make it, are actually really informed the work and were very powerful choices. But we had no idea it was going to be the success that it has been. You know, we were making a show for Fringe because we wanted to make it, and we thought there'd be a few people who might want to hear those stories. So.
And, of course, part of the reason we've squeezed this interview in today is because you're both about to head off on a tour of regional Victoria with
thylacine that will be underway by the time this podcast goes live.
That's right. We actually are going around Australia, not only regional Victoria, but we go to Western Australia, Tasmania, and we're so looking forward to going to Tasmania because, you know, it is the birthplace of this story, as well as New South Wales and regional Victoria. So it's really exciting for us because this tour has been 2 years in the making, really. Wow. It does take a long time to organise tours, and especially because Australia is such a large country and it involves a lot of money. So we're very fortunate to finally be able to be spreading this story to a lot of people in regional towns who I think it will really resonate with them.
Definitely in a different way to, I guess, inner city dwellers. I will put a link to your website with the podcast, and that will have the information.
Yes, I better update the website.
It will, absolutely. it'll have all of the venues and all of the dates on it.
So there's so much work that we could talk about with you guys. We only have a certain amount of time to talk. So I guess let's talk about Untold, which you mentioned at the start of the podcast, was part of the Cybeck Electric readings at MTC. Lauren, I believe you were lucky enough to catch this, but before we get your lowdown, can the ladies tell us a little bit about the premise?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we started writing Untold really about over a year ago, and we put it aside because we were it just wasn't the right project for us to be working on at that time, and we picked it back up again for Cybeck, and it was such a gift to revisit a work and be able to see it with clear eyes again. The premise, let me get to the point. It's about two sisters who are reunited when their mother dies and they haven't seen each other for 40 years. And it's essentially about a secret that they have kept for all those years, something that happened to them when they were kids that has had a huge impact on their life and the ramifications of keeping that secret. So that's what we look at in this play.
Yeah, so really it deals with what happens if you don't acknowledge something. And so while this is going on, there's a whole lot of stuff that's going on with the environment that sets the backdrop for the play. And I think, you know, it resonates in the way that there is a lot that's gone on in Australia that hasn't been acknowledged. And so how does that carry down through generation to generation to generation and affect if it's not acknowledged? And how do you move forward, or can you move forward if, you know, you don't acknowledge it?
It was really great for me. I mean, I try to support all your work.
You're amazing.
Because I love you guys and I love the stories that you tell. It was a fantastic opportunity for me to, you mentioned at the top of the interview that it was a different experience for you because you weren't performing in the piece. And it was really lovely for me to hear how your voices continue to evolve and fit together, and particularly when you're writing for characters external to yourselves. Can you talk about next steps? So do you know what will happen with the reading from here, or is that kind of on the back burner while you're touring?
In terms of while we're touring, we'll wait and see what happens with Untold. It's one of those great things that now we've written another play, and so we've got the opportunity to see where it will go on and be performed, and, you know, so that will all be happening. I guess those conversations will be taking place probably while we are on tour. And also while we're away, we have another project which has been put on the back burner for a good year and a half at least. So these are other opportunities keep coming up, and so, you know, we have taken them, but we've got this one project which is really important to us, so that's our next port of call. So we've already started the research, but we will be continuing the research and beginning to do the writing on that. I mean, being on tour is hard, so I guess we'll be doing a lot of the research as well when we come back, and then so that's also being developed this year.
And that's probably a lovely time to talk about some storytelling elements now that you're about to get stuck into that. What do you believe is the key to good storytelling?
I've got one thing that's really important to me. Make me care. Make the audience care. What? Don't assume. Well, it's don't interesting assume you say that. That the audience are going to be interested. And I think sometimes we do that in theatre. We assume that people are. I mean, I think sometimes we do that as people. We assume that people are going to be interested in all of the details of our lives and the weeds and the, you know, but it's about, and it was this really wonderful podcast I listened to, which was a collection about storytelling from the TED Radio Hour.
Was it The Act of Storytelling?
Yeah,
that was that. That's the main thing for me, and it ties back into what I said before about why is this important? Why is this an important story to tell?
Yeah, and it's interesting because there is a quote that we got from a Victoria University piece around They Saw a Thylacine, where you mentioned that you hoped that the show was not only good entertainment, but hopefully it would spark a conversation. So I guess it needs multiple points to get people hooked in. You know, it can't just be there for entertainment. In regards to the way that you create work, it needs a real meaningful edge.
And I love what you say about don't assume that people will care. And it's true in every area of our society at the moment. You know, we are overloaded with information. Just because someone's telling us a story isn't enough anymore.
Absolutely.
Anything you'd add to that, Sarah?
Yeah, I would say heart and humour and truth are very important. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yep.
And so is there a particular storyteller for you, Sarah, that you feel embodies those elements that inspires you?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's actually a mutual friend of ours, Lauren. Adam J.A. Katz.
I believe he was on the podcast.
Adam really has informed my work a lot. He's a very dear friend. And I must say, working with you guys in 2007... when I got to speak those words, the character Jim Bangle that I played, which Adam had written, that was the most fun I've ever had on stage. Up until that point, that was the most fun I'd ever had. And his writing for me embodies those elements. It has, and he plays around with truth.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and so Adam is a huge, I really look up to Adam.
And you, Justine, is there a storyteller that inspires you? Or is it you just going, we're going with Adam?
Let's go with Adam. Oh, there's so many storytellers who inspire me. So I don't think I can just go with one person in particular. There's so many Australian playwrights that I really, really admire. There's so many women, Australian novelists, as well, who I admire, and even, you know, and songwriters as well. I mean, some of the most amazing storytellers, Leonard Cohen, such an amazing storyteller in his music.
Yeah, it's like trying to pick your favourite child.
I used to make it sound like Justine is a horde of children.
Yeah, all those little munchkins.
That's right. All those munchkins out there. Well, one more question we've got for you, ladies, which is, what advice would you give to anyone out there who is trying to create art, whether it be in any form, or some advice for people that are just about to get involved with artistic collaborations? And is that something that you would totally advocate for to grow your career?
In terms of those two questions, the first...
I know it was two, wasn't it?
That's
sorry
right.
about that.
The first question, what advice would I give? I would say, be really true to yourself. Don't worry about what is fashionable. And don't try to change what it is that you're making in order to be fashionable or cool, or don't worry about those sorts of things. Go with what you really believe in. And that was something that we've done. I mean, you know, storytelling has been around for so long, we could very easily with our sort of work have gone, oh, it's, you know, so daggy or... And I think it's something that also the band AC/DC, that they actually learnt, because when their producers, who were the Easy Beats.
Easy Beats.
So, you know, they had their hit and then they tried to change themselves, and there was punk going on, and those guys learnt from that failure, so that when their brothers were performing with AC/DC, I mean, originally AC/DC were called, you know, the, I think they were the kangaroos from down under or something, you know, and there was so much, you know, electronica and punk going on, and they were just really true to themselves, and that authenticity is so important. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Don't try to follow the fad. What was the second question?
Maybe Sarah can answer just that. Advice for people who, you know, are looking to collaborate or hoping to collaborate, if you would advocate for that.
And yeah, absolutely. First of all, I would say surround yourself with people who you admire and respect, and pick the brains of people whose work you admire. Ask lots of questions, have coffee with lots of people, you know, make lists of all the great people you know, and make sure that you talk to them and ask them questions. Sorry, that's a bit of a rant.
love rants.
In terms of collaboration, like for me, being in a partnership theatrically has just been absolutely brilliant. It's been incredibly useful to have someone.
For me too.
Yeah. really wonderful. You know, we bounce our ideas off each other and we support each other. And it's a really wonderful situation. I would say, don't rush into collaborating with someone, though. Be mindful of that, you know. Maybe do some practicing first. Like, don't make a full-on commitment that you're going to work with someone forever if you don't gel.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing. Collaboration is such a buzzword at the moment in the arts. And some things, you know, some things don't need collaboration. Some writers are better off sitting in the room and, you know, writing what they need to write, or don't feel, I think, again, it goes back to that idea of authenticity. You know, do it if it's working. And, I mean, it is collaboration also, especially with writing, it poses a lot of challenges, you know. So I think absolutely, as Sarah says, be mindful and don't just do it because it's, you think it's going to get you the grant.
It can be hard work as well, you know. You have to find the balance and how you fit. And we've made 4 shows together now, and we're still finding how that fits and how that works. And it's exciting for us to explore that, but it's all part of our journey, and we'll probably keep exploring that for the whole time we work together, you know, for the next 50 years.
Well, you have to come back 100. In 50 years and tell us how you're going.
If we're still forecasting in 50 years.
My grandmother, 100 years' time, we'll be back on the show.
When my grandmother came to see They Saw a Thylacine, she said to the usher, she said, "I'm here to see They Saw a Dinosaur." So maybe we'll have to write that play one day.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much for sitting down with us today, and all the best for your tour. We're going to put some information up on the podcast site, and I don't know, Nick.
I was just going to say thank you for taking the time. You've got to now go and capture show, so we won't hold you up, but thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been an absolute delight.
Another brilliant interview in the bag.
Yes, indeed.
Nicholas Kane.
It really was. And Lauren, what did you take out of it?
Oh, just so many things. I mean, I really have so much respect and admiration for Sarah and Justine as artists. I think they're amazing. And I guess I know them both quite well. So it was lovely to sit down and talk to them about some things that I don't know. For instance, Justine talking about growing up and the influence that the Chinese travelling opera had on her.
Yeah.
Was just,
that was amazing.
Magical. And Sarah talking about the influence of nature and how that drives her. They're such interesting people and artists, and they come at the work, I guess they come from completely different backgrounds, but I just love that they've found each other and they're collaborating together and creating really powerful stories. I just think that's so inspiring.
Yeah, and they are really powerful stories. And as you touched on there, the thing that I took out of this particular interview was the really clear and specific guidelines they have for the way that they work together and the mission statement, I guess, of their company. For instance, the human-animal exchange is really exploring the relationships between human and animal instincts. And that's a really clear, wonderful anchor point for them as collaborators to sit down and go, rightio, we know exactly what we want to talk about together.
knowing that, what's our next step as a theatre company? And what's our next story going to be? Knowing we've got this really lovely, clear, specific anchor point from which to jump off from.
The tour, which has now started, is apparently just being so successful. And I'm just really excited to see what they do next.
Okay, Lauren, here we are. It's recommendations time. Woo-hoo. Have you got a recommendation for me?
I have got a couple of recommendations, a couple of exciting things to share. I went to the Ozflix launch earlier in the year. I was lucky enough to attend that at Acme. And for anyone who isn't familiar with Ozflix, Ron Brown, who's an experienced producer and director, and Alan Finney, who is the Australian Film Institute CEO, have got together to create a streaming service which they're hoping will become a sort of one-stop portal for every Australian film that has ever been made. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just pausing for effect there.
Every Australian film ever made.
Yes, every Australian film that's ever been made. So it's pretty exciting because if you look at all of the various streaming, online streaming services that we have around the world and that are, you know, constantly emerging, there's a mix of content on there and often a lot of American content. But this is somewhere that their aim is, you know, there are so many fantastic Australian films that you just don't have the opportunity to view. And so this is meant to be a platform for those and also for TV. And I went to the launch and the brilliant Karen Fairfax is on board with the project and she was there talking about it. And I just think it's a really exciting idea. So
I think it's something we're going to see a lot more of. And it's great to see someone, you know, a group like Ozflix doing something like this. And I love the fact that you can go to one place and be able to get any Australian film ever made. That's awesome.
It's so exciting. I guess that's more a thing to watch out for than a direct recommendation. But something that is happening on May 4th that I'm very happy to recommend is the Melbourne Surface Art Symposium. And of course, this is a project that the wonderful Emily Wills, who was on Podcast 22, is part of. And it's a one-day event which focuses on balancing the creative and the commercial side of surface pattern design. And it's geared towards artists and designers who are looking to expand their craft or want to know more about how to create and market and sell art that they've already created. I've read the blurb on it and I'm kind of like, oh, maybe I could be a designer for a day.
Maybe. But you know what I love about this, Lauren, is this is why Emily's going to do so well in Melbourne. This is the most Melbourne event I've ever seen in my life, I reckon. It's just fantastic, isn't it? It's like one of those events you're like, even if I'm not a designer, I want to go along and have a look at it, you know, just because I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, it's fantastic. They've got a panel of presenters for the day and a whole schedule of events. So we'll put a link up on our website. And for anyone who's sort of in the design world and wants to be more in the design world, I would definitely check this one out. I think it'll be a really exciting event.
Oh, fantastic.
So what about you, Nick? What have you got for us?
Well, I've got a book this month, Lauren, just to change it up
like,
a little bit.
You do like your books.
I do like a book. You know that I'm a self-help book junkie. But this one's a little bit different. So this one is called The Antidote by Oliver Berkman. The best way to describe this is it's kind of the anti-positive psychology way. So you know how self-help books are usually quite based around positive psychology and this, I guess, fad that's been happening over the past 20, 30 years around positive psychology and thinking positive. This book actually approaches it from a completely different angle and says too much focus on positivity and optimism is actually the problem and not the answer.
Wow. It's a bit contentious.
It is contentious, right? But it's a really interesting read because, as I said, I'm a self-help book junkie. I love positive psychology. But at the same time, there's something to be said about what they call the negative path to happiness, which is around making sure that, once again, we come back to balance, making sure that you learn from failure, you understand insecurity, and you're okay with it, as well as there's a wonderful quote by an author of a different book that's basically pumping up this book. And the quote goes something like this. It goes, "The book is countering a self-help tradition in which positive thinking too often takes the place of actual thinking," which is... that sums up the book for me. It really says positive thinking's great, but if you don't consider everything...
Yeah, that's such an interesting concept, positive thinking as a replacement for actually thinking for yourself.
Yeah, and this idea of false cheer. I'm going to pretend to be happy until I'm happy. Yeah. Well, sometimes setting expectations sets you up for failure. So there's a whole heap of beautiful concepts in this that I loved, because being so into positive psychology for so long and then hearing this other side, it's really just kind of balanced my thinking a little bit in regards to how I look at my life. So it's well worth a read.
Yeah, can you post that one down to Melbourne?
I can. Once I'm finished reading it, I'll post it straight down. Yeah, it's just a really cool read.
Fantastic. And that leads us nicely into what sort of thinking you're doing about your month ahead, Nick.
Well, 50% of it's going to be in Tokyo. That's happening. I better be clear, though. It's not just Tokyo. I'm heading to Japan. So I'm spending a few days in Tokyo, a few days in Kyoto. What I'm excited about is this is a bit of a cultural experience for me. I think we've been doing this podcast long enough now that that we've noted that this is something I try to do fairly regularly, see the world, experience different cultures. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. And Japan has such a distinct culture to experience, that's, been around for so many centuries, but also has kept a really distinct flavor of who it is.
That's fantastic. I learnt Japanese and I love the Japanese art, but I have not been. So I look forward to hearing your reports on your return.
I will once we're back. But, in the rest of the month will be sort of spent more classes, more Sydney Screen Acting Group's classes, as well as I've got a bit of a script idea in my head, Lauren, which hopefully I can share shortly. But it will be based around this idea that I spoke last month around my storytelling, gaining this sense of consensus or being around this idea of getting as many people as I can involved.
Is there anything... coming at it from that perspective, is there anything that I can do in a collaborative way that would help see this idea get to the next step of fruition?
Yes, and I will be talking to you about that shortly. Look at that. You knew it was coming.
Handball.
So there you
handball.
Go. And I think that's pretty much it for my month. The only other thing is getting stuck into my blog for this month, which is all based around family. Is the topic for this month.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what we all come up with for that particular theme, because obviously family is so central to a lot of facets of storytelling.
Yeah, indeed. And Lauren, let's get straight on to your month. What's ahead?
Now that I've made some adjustments to my schedule, I'm looking forward to taking this idea of trusting myself and this idea of ongoing creative projects that I talked about last time, and then going, well, those things are good. What new creative projects do I want to bring into my life, and what are those next steps? One of which will involve some more writing.
And great.
Given that you're being so secretive about your writing project, I'm going to be secretive about mine.
Okay, that's fine. I never said mine was a writing project, by the way, so...
Oh,
hold up, okay. Hold your horses.
I just made that assumption.
Yeah, you did.
And of course, this month I'm actually doing the seventh and last month of the course, the online course that I've been doing with Greg Apps.
Excellent.
I haven't really mentioned since the first couple of months when I started, just because I've been really keen to see a sort of how it all goes, because obviously there's several components to it. There's mentoring and connecting and self-testing. And so the self-testing is obviously quite a practical component, but the others require other types of learning. But it's about, for me, it's been about the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So this month will be my last self-tape. And I have had a couple of auditions recently and realised in those auditions that a lot of the technical stuff I've been learning has really grounded me in an audition sense.
Fantastic.
So I definitely I know we've already done with recommendations, but I definitely recommend anyone who's interested in growing their self-taping or auditioning skills, checking out the stuff that Greg offers. There are slightly different courses now to the one that I enrolled in. But it has been really great doing the work ongoing and sort of having the filter of someone who is a casting director and has so much knowledge in the industry. You know, even just going, everything I know about myself as an actor and everything I've learnt so far, getting his feedback, you know, where does that line up? And so many practical tools. So I really, really can recommend it.
That's mission successful, I think, isn't it, with that? Because if you're starting to see the difference in the room when you're auditioning, that's exactly what you did the course for. So that's a big, massive tick.
Yeah, it is. It is a big tick, and it's really nice. It's that thing where you just never know when things are going to drop in, and everyone learns at different speeds. And obviously, you get to watch everyone else's self tapes, but definitely in the last month or so, a few things have been clicking in for me. So, yeah. I don't know, writing and next steps and auditioning and maybe more auditioning. I think it's going to be a good month.
You'll be in Japan.
I'll be doing the hard yards here.
Yeah, but we can talk about it all on podcast 24.
Until that time, you can find us on the usual channels, our website, theactofstorytelling.com.au, about me, Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud and iTunes.
And as always, please give us feedback. We want to know how we can shape this podcast to mean the most to you.
So we do have a survey floating around somewhere. I might see if I can repost that link somewhere that's more useful for you guys to let us know what you're thinking.
Yes, and obviously the Cultural Temperature blog, Lauren, which this month we have the topic of...
family. Well, we've got a couple, because we're on a slightly different schedule to the podcast schedule, we've got a couple of diversity blogs still to come.
Yes, we do.
And then we'll be getting into family. We're really excited about what's happening on the blog, so we hope that you guys are too. In the meantime,
continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
Thanks for listening.